and welcome to the Lean on Agile podcast. I'm your host, Shaheen, and I have a great speaker and coach, Bob Galen, with me today to talk about passion and what we are passionate about. Bob, thanks for being on the show. Please introduce yourself for our audience. Who is Bob?
Okay. First of all, thank you, Shaheen, for inviting me. I really appreciate it. I'm Bob Galen, everyone. I'm an Agile coach. I do a little bit of training. I do more coaching. Been doing it for a little while. I've written a few Agile books. Probably the one that's most relevant is I've done something on software product ownership that I'm pretty proud of. That's an area of passion for me is the area of product. That's about all. I have a couple websites. One is rgalen.com, and one is Agile. What I'm proudest of, is Agile-Moose. So I'm trying to rebrand myself to be the Agile Moose. For whatever reason, I don't know. I like Moose. So one, because it's singular and plural at the same time.
So what is behind Agile Moose? So what was the thinking behind that?
Nothing? There was no thinking, Shaheen. It was just, so I used to live in Connecticut and I used to travel to Maine a lot. If you know the Maine, Maine is a northern state in the U.S. And I used to hang around the ocean there and inland in the woods. And there's moose, there's quite a few moose in Maine. So I'm enamored with them because they're big, but they're very agile. They're very nimble. So anything that can be big and agile at the same time makes me smile. Right. Like a big company, right? So, you know, doing that is a challenge.
Right. So let me give our audience a little bit of feedback how I know you. I met you at GOAT last year, 2019, where you had a keynote speaker talking about branding, and it resonated with me a lot. And that that talk that I was part of was, as I wrote on my blog, was the last triggering point for me to start my podcast. So I started my podcast in December 2019. Thank you, Bob. Again, it's good to mention Esther Derby and Amitai, that I really enjoyed their podcast, and they were two of the good podcasts that I am enjoying. But before that, I heard about Bob Galen. He's one of these great trainers that train people and certify people on Scrum. He's a certified Scrum trainer himself, the Scrum Alliance. And the way that I found about it is that he is not having public classes, or at least at that time, he didn't have public classes to certify people, but through the work that he does, through going to organization, he works with people and then he can certify people after seeing they are aligned with the values of the Scrum and they are doing the values and principles of Scrum. For me, that was, oh my God, this is amazing. This is not typical of the trainers. I always wanted to meet him, and it was glad that I believe the first time that I met you was at TriAgile, and then you had the keynote speaker at GOAT. So for those of you don't know Bob, he's a very well-known speaker, and he's do lots of training. And today we are going to talk about what's passion and what's branding around that. So Bob, I think this is something that is very similar to like the Agile Moves. If you haven't had put that much thought into that and you just started, I feel that it was like something that you felt that you need to do that. It was a passion in yourself that I wanted to get this one off the ground, starting this one, and share what you know with the rest of the world. And you didn't think about what the branding should be, what do I need the audience. You just started your blog, and now after you see some recognition, some traction, then you're focusing on that more. Well, is that the true assumption? Is that the correct assumption?
I think so. I mean, when I think of passion, it's an interesting word. I think my core passion is not, for example, speaking. In my head, so I started using Agile practices maybe around the late 90s. Extreme Programming was out, and then Scrum was out in 93. I started using Scrum loosely around 96, 97. I was a director of a pretty large team in Connecticut. And so I was an early adopter of agile methods or practices because I was sort of an experimenter as a leader. I was a developer, but I was also leading teams at the time. And early on, I gained experience early on. And then there was a lot of people that were struggling in the agile community early on. And so I think my passion, and it drives me to this day, is in my head, I have this vision of the community. For good or bad, it's probably for good or bad, but I think about the community, the agile community, the practitioners, and I think about what can I do to help them to share my experience. And so I'm generally passionate around that. That's driven my writing. So I wrote the first edition of the Product Owner book. I wrote in 2000. I published it in 2009. I started writing it around 2006-07. And it was because there was no guidance for product owners, and product owners were struggling. Like there was really a hard role. And I was in a company, and the product owners in my company were really struggling. So I thought of, what can I do to help? So my passion is around, probably the root passion is around help. One is helping the community. I think maybe a second passion for me, it's probably not a passion, is challenging myself out of my comfort zone. So I started writing because I was a terrible writer. Now I'm not a good writer now, but I'm not terrible any longer. I started doing public speaking because I was a flaming introvert. I mean, I was afraid. And here I am a leader. Like I had senior leadership roles and I was afraid of talking in public. And I had senior leadership roles and I was afraid of business communication. I can only say that now. At the time, it wasn't funny. So I have a tendency to challenge myself. So I think the two things that drive me is challenging myself and then giving to the community. And I'm pretty passionate about that.
How did you get to these core passions of yours? How did you find them? Do you have any easy way for our audience to tell them how to find what their core passions are?
I don't. So the first time I did public speaking, you've probably heard me tell this story. But in fact, it was I shared it at the GOAT, and it's a sad story, but it's a true story. A friend of mine. So there's two introverted guys. I'm the VP of development and the VP of quality, and we were both really introverted, Eric and me, and Eric, probably we were equally introverted, and we submitted a talk to this prestigious conference that was going to be in San Diego. And we were joking around. We're like, oh, we'll do a talk, blah, blah, blah. And we were kidding. And we thought it was a big joke. We were laughing to ourselves as introverts do. We weren't laughing outside. We were laughing inside. And then they accepted it. And it was like, holy cow, what are we going to do now? I mean, we literally looked at each other and we got white and we were scared and, you know, break out into a sweat. And so we can, you know, we had to go. And we went to San Diego and we did this talk. We did something on personal software process, which was a process from the Software Engineering Institute out of Carnegie Mellon. And the guy who created that was a gentleman who's passed away. His name is Watts Humphrey. He created the capability maturity model, if you've ever heard of that. And he created the He was a contributor to the Software Engineering Institute and PSP. And he was a keynoter at the conference. And we were talking about his baby, the PSP, and he sat in front of us in the front row. And so here we are, maybe 500 people, two introverts who had never done public speaking before. And it's like presenting the Bible to God, and God is sitting in the front row, critiquing our critiquing of his Bible, right? And we got through it, and that we were scared to death. And at the end of that, Eric has never, ever spoken to anyone in public again. And I realized that I could do it. And I had fun doing it. And so that was sort of, you know, for me, it was a little bit of fun and joy. It was something out of my comfort zone. And it sort of made me happy that way.
Right. So basically, you put yourself in an uncomfortable zone. And that led you to explore that public speaking is something that you enjoy and Eric doesn't enjoy, right?
And I had fun with it. It was painful fun, if you know, but seeing people listen, sharing with people, sharing what I've learned was something that I discovered I enjoyed. The other thing is I just kept at it. So I don't think I was very good at the beginning.
Right.
And, you know, I talk about trying to find my style. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, I copied other people's styles. So I tried to be other people. And then I discovered my own style and became comfortable with my own style. So it was a little bit of a journey. And I had fun with it, but it was challenging, and I improved.
I don't know who said this, but I heard this a lot. The road to improvement or personal growth is being comfortable being uncomfortable. So if you are comfortable being uncomfortable, I believe that's the true way of, at least if you don't know what your passion is, to find out what your passion is and then go at it.
I would agree with that. Right. I mean, I think I'm passionate about learning.
Right.
I mean, you and I have talked about, Shaheen, I'm 63 years old. Not that that's very old, but it's not young.
Right.
And I've just put myself through ORSC training.
Right.
At a time in my life, my wife, so this is sort of funny. when I told her how much it was going to cost, her initial response, well, you already are a coach. And I'm like, you're right. And she's like, you make money as a coach. I'm like, you're right. Mm-hmm. And she's like, that costs a lot of money. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, well, how much time do you have? And then she didn't finish it. It was like, so it's like the ROI. What she was saying is my product owner. Is the ROI might not be there, right? and I said, I know, but I said, you know, I want to learn. I want to continue as part of who I am. And I think I've embraced this agile thing. One of the reasons I'm so passionate about agile is I don't just say continuous learning. Do you know, I'm not just saying it. I believe it. And it's a part of who I am. And I'm passionate about, one of the reasons I'm passionate about Agile is I think it aligns with my personal principles so nicely, like continuous improvement.
You pointed out a very good point. So we are talking about continuous improvement a lot, but we are not talking that much too on the continuous learning, at least when we are starting some of the engagement of doing the transformation in large organizations. It's all about how can we improve, how can we improve. And then after a while, the leaders might understand that the path to improvement is that they need to invest in their people's learning capabilities as well. And when you give them time and some slack time, then they might be able to find their passion. And when they are finding what their passion is about, they don't feel stressed out about doing things. They don't look at, oh, we are approaching a deadline, we have to work hard. They enjoy working that much time. It's a left aside continuous learning principle or value, if I may say, in what we do day to day, which we should be focusing on. Lead by example. Like, you are leading that by example. I am in the same situation as figuring out what to focus on next and figuring out what's the ROI for me, right? Which one do I pick? Which direction do I go? I do things based on what I like most, and sometimes it catches on, sometimes it doesn't catch on. So as an example, we started a one-day event last year called Agile Games Canada. It's an open space around facilitation techniques using games and simulation. So at the start, we didn't know that we are going to find a location. We didn't know that we are going to find people that to come on. But I started with a simple tweet, and then people came along, and I saw like 80 people responded to that tweet, and they said, yes, we are going to be there. So, and after that, I said, oh, this is something I enjoy. So I found my passion around using games while coaching as well. So that's another avenue that I'm exploring myself. So I don't have an answer for people how to find your passion, but it's something that when you find it, you know that it's there. You know that you can't not pay attention to it. And if you are at work, I want to hear your thoughts on this one. If you're at work and you're feeling not happy, there is something to do with your passion. What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think principles, like find what you align with. I'm not triggering on passion, and maybe it's my definition of passion is something that I'm kidding around, but I'm bouncing off the walls, right? I'm passionate about American football. So I want to watch football games and things like that. But football doesn't drive me from the inside out, right? It's just something, right? It's sort of an outside. It's a sport. It's interesting to me. Other things I'm passionate about. And they're more external. I think when we talk about the job, it's more of the inside out, if you know what I'm saying. Like, there's an outside in passion, like football, soccer. People can be very passionate about soccer in Europe, et cetera, and it can be part of their life. But there's probably exceptions, but I think there's some things that are principled inside, like giving back. This notion of, you talked about it, walking our talk, right? I'm passionate about putting my money where my mouth is, walking my talk. Giving back to the community, things like that. I don't know exactly what it is. I've started agile groups like you talked about. Right. I've done open spaces a few times. You know, I would do it around coaching, for example. You did it around games. But to me, the underlying thing is like games and coaching are probably superficial. You did something interesting. You ran an experiment. You took a risk. You didn't know. You tried something, and then something wonderful happened. Like, it was an experiment. Yeah. It was a risk. It was something from the inside out. I hope I'm not sounding philosophical, but I think actually, to me, I think that's maybe less passionate and it's more principle based. It's something that, continuous learning. I think that's an inside out job.
Right.
And then I think there's alignment, like back to the jobs. People take jobs and they don't align with their principles. Do you know what? I hope I'm making sense. Sometimes we take a job for the money. Like, I did a podcast a series of podcasts with my friend Josh. And one of the series was talking about leaving the nest. I think it was a 3-part series. Part one was like leaving the nest. Then part two was kicking your butt out of the nest, like forcing you to leave the nest. And then part three was landing safely. Mm-hmm. And landing safely was about interviewing. So the first two were have courage to leave and find what you really enjoy. Right. And then the interviewing part was let's become better interviewers so that we align our work with our principles and our passion. Do you know what I'm saying? So we're interviewing, we're not just being interviewed, but we're interviewing the company very actively, and we're being picky,
right?
We're looking for some place where we can be happy, not outside and inside.
Right.
Did I just ramble there? I may have rambled off your question. Bring me back.
So what you mentioned about the nest, it's a good metaphor for looking at your job as your second home, I guess, right? So when you're at your job, is how much of your time, like more than a third of your time at least, or half the time that you are awake, you're spending there. If you're doing something that, I guess, as you said, the definition of passion is not, we haven't talked about it, or we didn't say like what exactly we mean by passion, and we are going to leave it that way. But if you're doing something that you don't differentiate between life and work, right, then that's what exactly truly is your passion, right? You are not thinking about, oh, I'm at work, I need to do this, or I'm at home, right? I need to do this. So for example, these days I'm focusing on presenting and helping leaders make decisions based on data. So when I'm at home and I'm working on some of the Excel sheets, it's not like that I hate this one. But since it's, I like to help them make those decisions based on data, I don't feel that I'm working. So it's something that, then you look back at it, and as you said, I felt it inside out. So there's, I don't know whose term it is, but inside out leadership. But it seems that this passion has to do something with your inside out leadership as well.
I agree. And maybe passion, and as you were talking, I was thinking joy.
Right.
And so passion to me, again, and this is my definition, passion is almost that sports, you know, like people are jumping up and down, they're passionate. Mm-hmm. Whereas joy is sort of like a warm feeling inside. I feel joy. Like when I saw my granddaughter for the first time, I felt joy. I didn't bounce around much. Mm-hmm. I felt joy. Mm-hmm. And it's this, and to your point, like I'm lucky. I was writing, I write a lot. You probably know that I write an awful lot. And I was writing a blog post or something this morning. And I was just articulating how blessed I feel that. So part of the reason I do what I do, I give back or I do podcasts, is I just feel like people have blessed me. I'm doing, like, I feel lucky. I'm doing what I enjoy doing. I'm doing what I enjoy. It's not work. My life and my work are the same. They're blended, and I have joy with it. And I'm thankful for that, because not everyone is in that position. So I have a lot of gratitude, and I want to give back. And I'm part of it is I'm a little older maybe, but I'm feeling very, very joyous about, hey, I found a place where it's, people say, find your bliss or find your joy and do what you, then it's not work, like you said. And so I don't think of my work. People ask me, what is my hobby sometimes? And I do gardening and I have some hobbies, but my hobby is my work, because I have so much fun doing it. Like tonight, you and I are talking, this is Monday night at 8:00. And, why would we do this if we didn't have fun doing it, right?
Yeah,
if
exactly.
We didn't have joy doing it. There's other things we could do at 8:00 on a Monday night, right?
Yeah, true. So I want to bring some of your points that I learned from at the GOAT keynote speaker about branding, and see what we can have those around our passion, right? Find those. So one thing that you mentioned about, your focus was how to find your true self, and be that person so that everyone else knows you as that true self. And one of the things that you mentioned was to find a mentor that or a role model that can help you get there. So what do you think about this mentorship model in helping with people's passion? If they are looking for their passions, if they are wanting to find that.
So one of the things, I'm an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started, I'll use Joanna Rothman is an example. Joanna is a speaker. So Joanna Rothman is an author. She's been in the Agile space. She's pretty well known in our community. She's from Boston. And she was a role model for me from afar. So one of the things I didn't have early on, and this is sort of sad for me, is I did have mentors. I had role models. And I went to a lot of conferences. I mean, I used to attend, the company helped me, and I would send myself to conferences, and I would watch everyone, and I would find role models, and Joanna was one of them. I had others, but she was probably one of the leading ones. I went to her website. I read her writings. I watched her speak. I saw what she was doing. In fact, one of the mistakes I made early on in public speaking is I tried to be Joanna. I literally tried to speak the way she does. And it didn't work out really well for me. It actually was terrible. I mean, I got very bad reviews. And then I quickly discovered that I wasn't being myself. But so I didn't have a lot of mentors. Maybe that was because I couldn't find them. Mm-hmm. I was shy. So I was introverted and shy. And I didn't really find them so much. I had leadership mentors, like leaders I worked for, who I really respected, but they didn't, even those guys didn't mentor me directly. Mm-hmm. And that's actually why I mentor people today. So I take on coaching, mentoring roles now for people. I have a WIP limit of about probably 5 to 8 people I'm coaching and mentoring at one time. Oh, wow. And I'm active in that because I didn't have it. So I was observing from afar. Now that was useful. That actually helped me a lot, but I probably could have accelerated my path if I'd have had more direct mentoring. Now nowadays, I don't know. I just recently have started getting coaches. So they're not mentors, but they're people who are coaching me. So, then I got experienced, and I think people were intimidated to mentor me or coach me. And now I have to really work hard to sort of pull coaches in and say, yes, I'm still a human being, right? And help me. Okay. And I need help in being coached.
I need mentoring.
Yeah, exactly. So now, Josh, I don't know if you've ever heard my metacast that I do.
Yeah.
Podcast. So I actually consider Josh to be a mentor. He would never say it that way, I learned from him a lot. And so I learn in a partnership. So I have more close colleagues now. But in the beginning, it was actually very hard. That's why, if you remember the dates I gave you, this is like a 20 to 25 year career. Like, it's a very slow. So I'm a slow learner. So it's a 20 year plus arc for me. Shaheen, you're going to do it in like 2 years. It took me 20 years. You're going to do it in 2 years.
It's nice of you to say that, but I don't think I'm going to get it in 2 years. So it needs lots of experience, lots of finding the right role models, finding the right networking, right? And one thing that I learned from you, and I believe it was after the PSL in class that I took, was to reach out. If you don't, you said you're introvert and you were shy. So if that type of a person you are, the audience, so reach out to other people and ask them for a mentor. You don't know how many people are out there that they want to give back. And when you do that, not only for mentorship, you can open up. And one of Bob's message was that ask other people to be invited to write a blog for them. He was offering to write a blog with him or co-author something if you are interested on a D-Zone, for example, or on any other people's famous weblog. You can do that. You can start that on a podcast. So after that, I sent a note to the Agile Uprising podcast to tell my story of how I become an Agile coach and how it's a passionate story. I'm not sure if I'm going to be on that. It's a very famous podcast. So, but I took that to heart as well. So if you're out there, just reach out and network. And until you do that, you never know who is out there that can be helping you. And the people around you might not be the right people to mentor you or to have the right skills or right mentality as and similarity to you. Yeah, so that's, networking.
That's why I'm so fond of that word. Remember, I used community, right? I think the Agile, so I've been involved in, throughout my career, I was involved in a software development community, architecture community. I'm not so involved in that today. Then I was involved in the software testing community for a while, Agile community, Agile coaching community. Right. What I've found is the Agile communities seem to be very friendly. They seem to be open in general, right? They seem to be open, friendly, helpful, and most people are trying to walk their talk. And so I really think if people reach out, a lot of times someone will respond to you and try to help. It's that get over that. It wasn't quite that way when I was starting, although I had some examples of that. I think I talked about Rob Sabourin is a testing consultant teacher in Montreal. His home is in Montreal. And my first book I wrote was something called Software Endgames, which was pre-Agile. It was about the end game of a project. So when software development projects went into testing and you tried to get the bugs down to get it delivered. And that was the end game. And I actually asked Rob to review my book because he was expert in that area. And and I was fond of bugs and triage. Like I really got excited about triage, bug triage. And he got really excited about bug triage. I was a real geek about bugs and data and things. And he was so gracious. He took my book in a few weeks, he gave me this, because he's a tester, he gave me this detailed analysis chapter by chapter with feedback. And I was blown away at his, just how gracious he was and how helpful it was. And he did it for nothing. And he didn't, Shaheen, he didn't even know who I was. I mean, he liked the topic. But I just reached out to him. So I had some of those events early on, and that's, again, why I want to give back. Because along the way, people have been very gracious to me.
Right. And you mentioned Joanna Rothman. We had her on the podcast on the second episode. She was talking about how to write and how to speak in conferences, especially since Agile 2020 is coming up. We had her. And you guys, if you... So let me track back. I'm helping one of the my clients to become a good speaker. And we are proposing something for Agile 2020. It's not, we are not guessing that we are going to get accepted. But you know what? We put our talk there and Joanna Rothman provided feedback to us. And it was such an immense level of details and level of knowledge that you can get out of that. So try things out. So put yourself in uncomfortable positions. Try public speaking. Try. I always go back to Jerry Weinberg. He said, I learn something, then I teach something to learn it more. Then I'm going to speak at a conference about it to learn it more. And then I'm going to write a book about it. And all of these things is about, for me, to improve myself and learn more. So try anything that you can do to learn, and through this learning, you can find what truly is lies beneath that. And I totally agree with you that my background coming from development background, I found the Agile community very helpful and very open to new people, new faces. They help you, they give you guidance, they teach you. It's worth mentioning. The main meetup that I was going to Agile Ontario by Ardita. She was a track coacher on Agile Alliance as well, 2 years ago. So she's a well-known, I guess, coach around, especially in Canadian community. She's a very well-known coach. So, that was part of those meetup that I was going there. It was only maybe 10 people that was showing up. Now it's expanded. Now there's 50 people, 60 people, or even more coming to those meetups. So I put myself in an uncomfortable position to talk at one of those small meetups with another person. And through that, I was like, okay, so I think similar experience that you had with Eric, I think I should, I'm good at this one, maybe give it another try. So I tried it and tried it and tried it. And my highlight of talking was 2 years back at Agile 2018, talking about communities. And so it was a good experience for me. But yeah, there are lots of good resources out there to rely on.
The other thing that we were talking about is passion and joy. I would say don't be reluctant to run an experiment and then fail. And what I mean by fail is, like, public speaking is not for everyone. I joke, I use Eric as a foil, but there's nothing wrong with not wanting to do public speaking. So try it. If you like it a little bit, then try it again. If you like it a little bit, keep trying it. If you don't like it, well, then pivot and maybe do some writing. Right. Or pivot and maybe do some group organization and networking, and or pivot and do something. There's reviewers at the Agile conference, right? Like you were saying.
Right.
Each one of the tracks, you can join the track as a reviewer. It's a volunteer role, and you can give feedback to, and it's wonderful feedback. It's incredibly valuable to the speakers, to the potential speakers, whether they get accepted or not.
Right.
So what I'm suggesting is don't be reluctant or shy about finding where you have your fun or right. your bliss, and then sort of expand on that.
Awesome.
What else? Anything else you want to talk about?
So one thing that I want to talk about, and maybe finish it off with that, or if there are more, okay. You mentioned about be coachable. So that's something that I see figures like or pictures here and there, like people post that you don't need any skill set to be coachable, but I think you need a skill to be a skill to be coachable. So after all these years of coaching, so tell us, how can we be coachable?
So I'll do it this way. And you're an exception, Shaheen, so I'm not going to refer to you.
Okay.
But I see a lot of coaches. I do some coaching of coaches. I do quite a bit of coaching of coaches, directly, indirectly. A lot of coaches will approach me with a problem and ask me to help them. Mm-hmm. And so I have a pretty wide network of people that I know who say they are coaches. And I observe. So one of the things, remember, I was going back, I didn't get mentoring, so I'm an observer. Mm-hmm. And I observe the landscape. And I have observed that so many coaches don't practice what they preach. Mm-hmm. So I'll pick on them in WIP limit. WIP limit, work in progress limits. Right. So most coaches I know will talk to their clients and tell them that they're bad if they have excessive WIP. They will harangue their clients. You have too much WIP. You have too much in your portfolio. Stop starting and start finishing, blah, blah, right. blah. They'll have all these words around that. But then if you look at the coach, they have excessive WIP. They're running all over, they're running all over the country doing training classes. They have 22 clients. They're speaking. They have 5 talks that they're working on. So their personal WIP limit is excessive. So they talk, but they don't apply it to themselves. And so that's what I mean by coachability. I think walking our talk and being coachable is we practice what we preach. So what are some of the, so you tell me, transparency is a core tenet. So we should be transparent as coaches. We should be reducing our WIP. We should be finishing things as opposed to starting things. We should be collaborative. right? Like you and I are collaborating now. And I think we should have humility and say, I don't know everything. So again, part of the reason I went to ORSC training was to admit and say, I need help on the coaching side of things. I can get better and be coachable. One of the things I've learned in ORSC training is we coach each other. So it brings your humility. You're humble. You have to receive. So receiving feedback, you with me? A lot of coaches are good at giving feedback, but they're not very good at receiving feedback. So that's what I mean by coachability, is work on the characteristics that we're sharing with our clients and embody them ourselves as much as possible. And I think a lot of coaches fall into the trap where they're good at giving, but they're not good at receiving. They're good at telling, but they're not good at doing.
Right.
And I'm trying to improve myself in that area.
Right. And what I learned is that if you find yourself, you're not practicing what you preach, think about why aren't you practicing what you preach? Is this something internal that is stopping you from practicing what you preach? And that might be a very good point to improve yourself. So if, for example, you are telling everyone else to be transparent, but you are not transparent, what's inside you that is stopping you from being transparent?
Exactly. And if it's a real problem, then getting a coach to help you through that.
Right.
And then being coachable, meaning take that feedback and try to do something with it. Right. Try to improve yourself there a little bit. The other related thing to that, and I'd like to hear what you have to say, is what I'm finding. So I'll use my class. I teach a certified agile leadership class.
Right.
And in my Cal class, and I just finished one, I'm trying to model behavior more. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually I'm teaching leadership. I'm teaching agile leadership aspects, and we have dojos, and we go through things and activities. But above all of that, I'm trying to behave in an agile way as a leader of the class. I'm trying to model, mm-hmm. I'm trying to model the behaviors that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. In my last Cal class, someone actually noticed that and gave me feedback. And they're like, you all are running this class as agile leaders.
Nice.
And I didn't say much, but I was like, oh, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And so the point I'm trying to make is I actually think as coaches, modeling, walking our talk it's not just for us. It's mm-hmm. showing our clients what good looks like.
Right.
It's probably the most compelling coaching advice we can give them is if we can talk to them or we can show them.
Right.
I think showing is more powerful than telling. Right. What do you think?
Yeah. So modeling, or I refer to it as leading by example. You lead by example, you model, but you're not ready at a point to receive that. You're not going to be able to receive that, and they're not going to be able to comprehend that. So later on, they might come back and say, standard, and come back and say, oh, I got it. But if they're ready at that point, they're going to see that. And for the next couple of situations that might come along, if, for example, if they want to have a good agile coach to come in and teach the leadership, then they won't hesitate to call Bob Galen. So it would be perfect the way that... So lead by example or modeling, similar to coaching, if people are not ready for receiving coaching, it's not going to have effect on them. But if they are ready for it and asking for it, it's going to be immensely effective on them. Similar thing, I think, as modeling. So it was in one of your podcasts that you were talking about your approach to Cal 1 versus other people's approaches to Cal 1. And I'm glad that you brought it up because I was kind of interested in learning what's your approach in Cal 1 is. So you're modeling leadership that they are going to learn about it and they're going to see that. That would be amazing. Yeah.
It's hard to measure it though. So it's easier to measure, did I have the conversation?
Right.
like the modeling, they may not realize it until weeks later, or even, you know, it may take, but they were exposed to it and they saw it. So that's what I mean by coachability. I think is modeling is walking our talk, and it's literally, you know, being coached, like looking for a coach. I think Michael De La Maza is a coach on the West Coast, and Sheree Silas, and they talk about, you know, they almost say you have to have a coach. So I think if you are an agile coach, I'm not prescribing it, but you probably should have your own. How could you coach if you don't have one yourself? So I'm actually, you know, that's again part of my coaching journey, is making sure that I have a coach.
I'm available, Bob.
Cool. But you know what, Shaheen? I probably can't afford you. So you're probably too expensive for me.
Maybe we can make a deal.
Let's take it offline. Exactly.
Okay, Bob. Thank you for your time. Is there anything else that you want to share with our audience before we close this episode?
No, I just wanted to. I enjoyed this conversation. I think it's. I want to weigh in, and I think it's an important. We ended up on some important bits throughout it. So even though we were lighthearted, I think there was some really keys in this discussion that are really important for folks. And then the other thing is just, like I said, I write a lot. So you can find me at meta-cast.com. And you can find me at rgalen.com. That's where I blog on my business. And then you can find me at agile-moose, which is sort of my soapbox. The Agile Moose is where I can say things a little bit more strongly than I normally wouldn't say on my business website. So, and you can look in both places. But again, thank you so much.
Thank you for being on the show. We are going to put your information, if you don't mind, on the notes. And some of these resources that we talked about, I'm going to compile them and put it on the show as well. Thank you, Bob. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed, and hopefully we have you sometime soon on the show again.
Oh, I would love to come back, and I applaud you for doing this. So I think it's a really interesting experiment. So I hope you continue to blog, not blog, but to podcast. Okay. Have a good evening, Shaheen.
You too. Bye.
Bye, everyone.